I wanted to write the book for a couple of reasons. First, I started off researching the Holocaust, and I'm a grandchild of two survivors, so I was researching the stories and also their personal stories and histories to work on another book, a memoir of my experiences trying to dig up those stories, essentially. When my grandmother died, and that memoir was pretty much complete, I started writing a novel, and the novel, through these many evolutions, wound up transforming this character who was just this New York guy into an infant survivor of the Cambodian genocide. From there, I just was very interested in what had happened in the 1970s in Cambodia. When my wife and I were planning our honeymoon, Southeast Asia came up. We decided to go down there for about 10 weeks. A big chunk of our time was spent in Cambodia. What's unique to the country is that the survivors are still there. So it's less about visiting the sites, and it was more about interacting with the survivors and the next generation. The survivors had their stories, and like my grandparents who had survived the Holocaust, most of them wanted to keep those stories to themselves. I was stunned by how little people who lived in Cambodia knew of what had happened. Also, because I'm a teacher in New York as well, and my own students know nothing about the genocide there. So I wanted to write the book to kind of promote education about those events and kind of show the current situation with what people knew there. And I also thought another way to help people recover was to donate to a charity. About a third of the proceeds, or exactly a third of the proceeds, will be going to a charity in Cambodia. It's called Safe Haven Cambodia Children's Trust, and they basically try to keep families together because a lot of families are being broken up. They also offer education and medical services to children.
I'm not sure that visiting the killing fields in Cambodia would be the first choice for most people on their honeymoon, but I congratulate you for doing that. And you mentioned that a lot of the locals wanted to keep the stories basically to themselves, the ones who had survived it. How open were they eventually in telling you their stories and showing you specific locations?
The longer you spent with somebody, the more comfortable they became. Certain people definitely opened up. We got to know one of our tuk-tuk drivers. Instead of spending the day in the tuk-tuk when we went off for a long hike, he wanted to join us. And on that hike, everywhere we went, some place kind of connected him with the past story. That's kind of when the stories flowed, just by spending the day with him. And he invited us back to his house. And, you know, the stories just kept coming.
Did you find that the young people are learning some of these stories from the older people who obviously know them?
I think many of them do know what happened, but as one of the survivors had pointed out to me, I don't think they understand why any of this happened. The propaganda that is disseminated by the current government and the ignorance that they hope the people will have, the government was involved in some way, many of them, with the Khmer Rouge when they were younger. Obviously, you know, they were brainwashed young men themselves. But this level of embarrassment that would go along with a proper education, that would really shine a light onto some of the people in charge, and they don't necessarily want that. One of the things that shocked me the most was that my wife and I, we were sitting in Siem Reap, which is a town famous for its proximity to Angkor Wat and that whole temple complex out there where pretty much most tourists to Cambodia will go. And a boy, teenager, walked up to us, and he showed me a book. It was by a survivor of the Cambodian genocide. He was showing me this pirated version of the book, and he was trying to get me to buy it. And when we asked what he was learning in school about history, he said that they learned only about ancient history. Through conversation, he basically revealed that what happened in the 70s is not going to make money for these kids when they go off to maybe become tour guides in the future, because all the money is in Angkor Wat. All the money is knowing about what happened hundreds and thousands of years ago at these temple ruins, not what happened 30-odd years ago across the country.
This trip must have had a tremendous personal impact on you and your perceptions of Cambodia before and after your visit.
I don't know if I was really shocked by any of the sights. I kind of knew what to expect. I was most shocked with the people. The government's very corrupt. They are silencing peaceful protesters who are trying to fight for fair working wages and other people who are challenging Hun Sen, the prime minister. Despite corruption, despite poor education, despite having one-third of all Cambodians living on less than a dollar a day, despite the healthcare system being one that allows for the highest infant and child mortality rates in the region, I think you just have a really optimistic people. The one thing that really highlighted that for me was when I came out of Cheonggak, the killing fields, I went to this little outdoor cafe across the way, and I heard this blunt, like, smacking sound. So I peered around this tarp, and I see on the floor about 12 men and all of their prosthetics scattered about. And the men, they're all sitting on the floor playing volleyball over a net that's quite low because none of them have any legs. It was very touching to see, no matter what these people face, they really just don't give up and they're ready to endure. And I think that's what the country needs.